Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 100 Years, 100 Movies, The Revenge. This is going to be the final episode of Season 2, and today we're going to be kind of wrapping up this triumvirate of franchises, comics franchises that are not related to the MCU, and we're going to be talking about Batman. Specifically, we're going to be talking about the late 80s, early 90s Batman and the Nolan Dark Knight trilogy. Batman is probably the most popular superhero currently, and probably like the last 30 years, and that's not going anywhere. In comic book terms, every comic is, on a month-to-month basis, is compared to Batman, because Batman continues to be the bestseller. And, I mean, this is a lot lower than the peak of sales that I was talking about like last time in the 90s. But really, everything is in competition with Batman because Batman is ever popular. In movies, in video games, in cartoons, Batman is omnipresent. Batman is everywhere. And Batman is my favorite superhero on top of everything else. So this is my podcast, and I want to finish talking about movies by talking about Batman. Now, I'm going to kind of mush these two franchises into one, and I'm gonna rank these. Now, as I mentioned, The Dark Knight Rises is my favorite of the Nolan movies. I don't think it's the best, so it's not ranked first. Overall, the best of these two separate franchises about Batman is The Dark Knight, followed by Batman 1989, followed by The Dark Knight Rises, Batman Begins, Batman Returns, Batman and Robin, and then finally Batman Forever. Yes, I think Batman and Robin isn't the worst of these. I think it's Batman Forever, and I will get into the reasons why. Now, as I mentioned, Batman is omnipresent, and there's certain things about Batman that are always kind of the status quo, and that is Bruce Wayne is Batman. He has his butler, Alfred, that helps him out. Usually, he's dressed in black, at least in the movies, and he has some kind of bat-themed vehicle, either a plane, a car, a motorcycle, and he has a colorful gallery of rogues, although we end up kind of focusing on the same ones over and over again. But Batman is great. Batman has endured since the 1930s, and the only other major superhero that's been around longer than Batman is Superman, the first superhero. Batman, I think, is aspirational in the fact that he is the best of humanity. He is supposed to be the peak of human conditioning, of human athleticism, and of human intelligence. Batman is like a Renaissance man. He's the best at everything. And even though people talk about Superman not being relatable, I think the fact, and I think a lot of that has to do with people just thinking like, oh, he's invulnerable. He can't relate to that. He can't be hurt. And even though Batman is usually presented as even being able to beat Superman, everyone can relate to Batman because Batman's just a guy in a bat suit, even though he is the best of humanity and how he's presented. Batman himself usually, a lot of times, wasn't necessarily the focus of his own movies, and that really didn't change until Nolan kind of took over. But I think there's something about this particular character that has just kind of struck with people, and I think there's a couple of things. One, there's the whole idea of, like, he's just a regular guy, even though he's a billionaire, and once again is at peak of everything, but there's almost a sense of, like, I could do that. I think there's also this sense of being a vigilante who is selfless, who is just looking out to try to better his city and to save everybody from these horrible villains that people enjoy. And on top of that, you know, he's got like the best, like as Jack Nicholson says in Batman, where do you get all those wonderful toys? And Batman definitely has some wonderful toys. Now, I feel as on top of all that, there's just something about Batman that strikes with people, something about the imagery, something about something dark that is there to protect us, something that unites us all in a way, and there's just something fundamental about why people like Batman, and Batman's never going to go away. I mean, maybe eventually he'll go away, but not anytime soon, and probably not until long after I'm dead, but Batman is just great. I love Batman. I'm always up for another Batman movie, and whenever they announce something, I'm always like, well, I want to see it because I'm curious as to what's going to happen. The thing with Batman is there's been a lot of different people that have portrayed him, and almost probably more than have portrayed James Bond, when I think about it. Going back to like the serials in the 40s and to the 1960s TV show with Adam West, and I'm sticking mainly to live action here. We, of course, have Kevin Conroy as the voice of Batman in the Batman animated series, which, like I mentioned, for my generation, we grew up with those movies. I guess you could throw in Mask of Phantasm as a movie. I don't. Yes, it was released theatrically, but I think people look at that through with a lot of nostalgia. It's a good movie. It's just, it's a long episode of the series, of the show. That's really all it is. Really well done one. And the show itself is great, but not a movie. Now, I'm just kind of prefacing with this just because, like I mentioned, I really enjoy Batman, and I think I need to try to be objective, but I'm not going to be able to with a lot of this stuff. And a lot of it is, I think, just how things, how it kind of goes with these particular movies, just because Batman has been part of my life since I was a little kid. I mean, I think the only other superheroes that I can remember knowing of longer than I've known Batman are probably Superman and Spider-Man, and maybe the Hulk. But that's it, you know? Batman's always been present. I mean, my kids know who Batman is. I don't even have that many Batman things in my house. Like I mentioned with Spider-Man, there's Spider-Mans everywhere. There's like maybe two or three Batman toys in my house, and I don't have like Batman posters or Batman shit everywhere. Trust me, there's Spider-Man stuff everywhere, but not Batman. And yet, even my two-year-old son knows who Batman is. Interesting enough, he also thinks that Black Panther and Captain America are Batman, but he knows who Batman is. So I'm just going to go through these movies just to kind of give my thoughts on them. So I had talked about some of them, so I'm just going to briefly touch on the ones that I've talked about. So as I mentioned, when in the first season, 1989, Batman was had this huge marketing blitz that just kind of got the word out there about this movie coming out, and everyone was super excited, and this movie fucking rocked, man. In retrospect, this movie is a lot more stagey and a lot hokier than I remember it, but I still enjoy this movie. I think Michael Keaton as Batman, I love Michael Keaton as Batman. He does this great thing, like he's able to really kind of nail the insanity of a person that is willing to dress up as a bat to fight criminals, and the physicality, it's there, it's fine, it's like, you know, I don't know how much physicality you could really have in a suit that you could barely move in, but Michael Keaton just kills it as Batman. And the thing is with those first four, the Tim Burton movies and the Joel Schumacher movies, is that the main focus really isn't Batman. Batman's there, obviously, but the main focus really is the villains. And definitely in that first Batman movie, the main focus of that movie really is Jack Nicholson as the Joker. I mean, Jack Nicholson was obviously the bigger star between him and Keaton, but I think that's just a lot of the fun is just these crazy characters, and just the Joker is just one of the greatest comic book villains of all time, and having this character that is willing to go to these crazy lengths to be in on the joke and to make people laugh and usually his jokes mean killing people, but where that's like his aesthetic, where he's almost just trying to egg people on because he wants attention more than anything, is really interesting. And just having Jack Nicholson unhinged and total Jack mode, acting the fool and just acting crazy, is great to see in this movie. And this movie revitalized the character of Batman in a way, and introduced him to a whole new generation in a new way. And as I mentioned, you know, like Batman being a dark character, in the comics, you know, his costume is traditionally gray with a blue cowl and cape. In the Batman movies, it's always black, you know, and I think that was part of the idea of like, oh, like we're going darker, you know, like this is going to be grittier. And in my head, and I think in a lot of people's heads, looking back at that movie, at the time it felt really gritty. But if you look back on it, it's not. It's definitely a superhero movie, but it's a lot of fun. And really, considering this is a Tim Burton, this is probably one of the least Tim Burton-like movies that Tim Burton has ever directed. But in 92, that was completely rectified, because in 92 we got Batman Returns. And Batman Returns is a straight-up Tim Burton movie that happens to have Batman in it. This isn't Tim Burton directing a Batman movie. This is Tim Burton directing a Tim Burton movie with Batman. And once again, the main focus of this isn't even Batman. The main focus are the villains. And what wonderful villains we get in this movie. We get Catwoman, portrayed by Michelle Pfeiffer, and the Penguin, portrayed by Danny DeVito. The Penguin, of course, in this movie, because this is a Tim Burton movie, looking horrific. In the comics, the Penguin is just kind of a portly guy with a long nose who uses umbrellas and goes whack from time to time. In Batman Returns, the Penguin is a mutated baby who gets flushed down the sewers by his rich parents, the Cobblepots, and survives somehow and grows up to be a human with deformed hands and penguin-like teeth, played by Danny DeVito with aplomb. Like, this is Danny DeVito at some of his darkest. He is basically a raging id monster who wants to fuck women and wants power. Like, there really is no other way of explaining the Penguin, and he does this by trying to become mayor and by trying to destroy Batman. Michelle Pfeiffer, as Catwoman, she does this great job of kind of at first presenting her as this very mousy character of Selina Kyle, who is very reserved. And then she gets murdered, basically, by her boss, played by, Christopher Walken, her boss Max Schreck, which once again, that's a complete reference to the actor Max Schreck from Nosferatu. But Christopher Walken is great as like the tertiary villain in this. Selina gets resurrected by cats, as happens, and becomes Catwoman, who then goes on to become, to kind of give in to her inner desires, and fashions this very memorable suit out of pleather and latex, and goes around whipping men and stealing shit left and right. Catwoman, like, Michelle Pfeiffer is great as Catwoman, and it was really, really interesting to see that as an 11-year-old boy on the precipice of puberty. That's all I'll say about that. But this movie is a lot of fun. As a Batman movie, it isn't a Batman movie. This is really a Tim Burton movie where he's talking about these freaks, Catwoman and the Penguin, and interspersed with that, you get, you know, Michael Keaton at times acting mopey and then straight up murdering people. Like, there's no way around it. He shoves a whole roll of dynamite down a clown's pants and then kicks him to the side and they blow up. I'm pretty sure that guy's dead. So yeah, like, this is an interesting movie, and this is a much darker movie than the first movie, to the point that Warner Brothers really wasn't able to market this movie to kids, even though they did, but I guess there was complaints from McDonald's or something that was selling Happy Meals with Batman figures in it, and then this movie came out, and like, oh my god, and everyone clutched their pearls, and so they course corrected with Joel Schumacher and Batman Forever, a movie that once again, and not only did we get a new director, we also got a new Batman. Now we have Val Kilmer as Batman, and Val Kilmer, I think, he does a good job with what he's given in this movie. Unfortunately, this movie is completely derailed by Jim Carrey's manic energy. Jim Carrey is Jim Carrey at like the height of his popularity, and he is basically told go fucking nuts, and he does. And when I first saw this when I was 14, I thought that was great. Having rewatched this, I could barely sit through this movie. I wanted to chuck stuff at Jim Carrey in particular in this movie, because he's so fucking annoying. So annoying, in fact, that I prefer Batman and Robin to this. I couldn't even concentrate on other stuff in this movie whenever he would show up on screen, because he would be mugging to the cameras to such an extent and trying to just, it was basically like, look at fucking me, I'm Jim Carrey, ha! You know, like, there's no other way around it. And it really, really, in retrospect, hurts this movie. Like, I mean, I think at the time, because Jim Carrey was such a big thing, it was easy to kind of overlook it. But looking back on this movie years later, it does not work, and it just really, really, really hurts this movie. And I mean, I've seen this movie enough times to be able to tell you what it's about. Basically, we introduce, it's kind of, in a way, redoing the first movie, where we're talking about the trauma that Bruce Wayne went through to become Batman. We introduce Harvey Dent. Well, reintroduced, I guess, because Harvey Dent was in the first movie, played by Billy Dee Williams. But he's reintroduced, played by Tommy Lee Jones, in this movie. And he gets turned into Two-Face when he gets acid splashed in his face. And we get Edward Nigma, a Wayne Enterprises employee who's obsessed with Bruce Wayne and wants to become Bruce Wayne, and who becomes the Riddler. We also have the introduction of Chris O'Donnell as Dick Grayson, who becomes Robin, of course. And we get a interesting little cameo by Coolio, who I've been told was supposed to be the Scarecrow, but I'm sure if you want to say that. I mean, he doesn't have any lines, and the only thing I can think about that is, honestly, I don't even know where that's coming from, but I had heard that at some point, and fine, if you want to believe that Coolio is supposed to be the Scarecrow in this movie, perfectly fine. This movie, it was a lot more fun when I first saw it, but yeah, dude, seriously, just Jim Carrey just kind of, there's a lot of overacting. It's not just Jim Carrey, but Jim Carrey, like, when you have Tommy Lee Jones already overacting, and you overact more than Tommy Lee Jones and a bunch of other people in this movie, it just totally derails this thing. And I think this movie is unwatchable, to be perfectly honest with you. I know a lot of people really like it. I just can't sit through this anymore. And I don't have the time to waste to try to sit through this once again. And it's kind of sucks, because there's certain things that are pretty good about this. I mean, Val Kilmer is good. We have some actually pretty funny jokes. Like, you know, there's a scene where Robin says, "Holy rusted metal, Batman." And it's because there's literally rusted metal with holes in it. But it's obviously a reference to the 1960s TV show. And in a way, this movie really is taking that aesthetic from the 1960s TV show and putting it on the big screen. And that movie was a massive hit. It made tons of money, to the point that they greenlit a sequel, Batman and Robin, which everybody fucking hated. And which, in retrospect, is terrible, yes, but not as terrible as you remember it. There's a lot of dumb stuff in it, definitely. And the third act of the movie is almost unwatchable, but at the very least we get a reprieve from Jim Carrey in this movie, and for that alone, I would much rather watch this one than watch Batman Forever. Once again, we get Joel Schumacher in what is literally just like a big action take, a big movie version of the 1960s TV show. We have thugs on skates. We have Batman and Robin rollerblading around trying to fight them in a hockey fight. And interesting enough, those were all actually extras. All those extras were players from the Los Angeles Kings. We have Arnold Schwarzenegger as Dr. Victor Freeze, or Mr. Freeze, spouting one-liners left and right. We have George Clooney mugging to the camera as Bruce Wayne slash Batman. We have Uma Thurman doing some truly horrific acting, which for Uma Thurman, that's saying a lot, as Poison Ivy and Dr. Pamela Isley, in a costume that is so fucking atrocious that, shit, Cardi B's Halloween costume from last year was a better Poison Ivy costume than this. We also have Alicia Silverstone introduced in this movie as Batgirl, in this case Barbara Wilson, the niece of Alfred Pennyworth, not the daughter of Pat Hingle's Commissioner Gordon, who has been in all four of these movies along with Michael Goff. And we also have this MacGuffin of McGregor's disease, which I love the fact that in the Flash series, TV series, they actually have a character who is dying from McGregor's disease, because it's not a real disease, and they just fucking made it up for this movie. And to have it in another DC property, I was like, I see what you did there, and good on you. This movie is basically a rainbow puking on screen. It is a neon nightmare. It's not very good, but like I said, it at least doesn't have Jim Carrey. So just for that alone, I think it's better than Batman Forever. This movie also has Bane in it as basically a masked luchador on steroids, which, to be fair, is very close to what Bane looked like originally in the comics, and kind of to, he wasn't a luchador, but the look of it and the fact that he's on Venom, like, those are all things that are from the comic. But just the way that he looks and the way that he's used as, like, this mindless muscle, I'm like, that's a very bad take on Bane. But this movie was supposed to have, like, another, there was supposed to be another Joel Schumacher sequel that was supposed to be, kind of go back to being much grittier and darker, but people disliked this movie so much that that was placed on hold, and eventually that was dropped, and we didn't have another Batman movie. Like, there was talk of all these Batman movies after Batman and Robin in 95, or I'm sorry, in 97, but we didn't get anything until 10 years later with Batman Begins, and before that, we got all these interesting starts and stops. Like I had mentioned before, there was Darren Aronofsky's Batman, which is supposed to be this gritty take on Bruce Wayne being an orphan who was raised by Big Al, a mechanic, and who goes around dressed up as in like a homemade Batman costume, beating people up with a baseball bat and punching them with leaving a bat insignia after he punches them with a ring. So yeah, a very different take on Batman. Obviously, that never happened. We also got what was supposed to be like a Batman-Superman script wherein they team up to take on Lex Luthor and the Joker, and that also didn't happen, and I've seen some of the ideas in that that would have not been good. There was also talk of doing a straight-up Dark Knight Returns movie with Clint Eastwood as an older Batman, which also didn't happen. So there was a lot of talk of kind of what the next step for Batman would be, and we didn't get anything until Batman Begins in 2005, which is the beginning of Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. And the thing with these movies, with the Dark Knight trilogy, is that they really focus on Bruce Wayne. They don't focus so much, yes, the villains are important in these movies, but they aren't the main focus of these movies. Because even those two later Joel Schumacher movies, the main focus was on Riddler and Two-Face and on Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy. It really, Batman was there to stop them, really. That's all he was there for. And to smile at the camera. Now, with these movies, we get the origin story of Batman and how Bruce Wayne is able to train to become Batman. So in this movie, we get this idea of the League of Assassins, and we introduce Ra's al Ghul, who's one of the best Batman villains from the comics. Ra's al Ghul is an eco-terrorist who uses Lazarus pits in order to keep alive. He's hundreds of years old, and his machinations are basically there to ensure that the Earth will survive, even at the expense of the deaths of many, many humans. He cares more about the world than he does about humanity. And while Batman Begins is supposed to be much more grounded, that sounds like a character that would be very difficult to do in a more grounded sense. But they take an interesting way of doing that. So in this movie, we start off with Christian Bale, who plays Bruce Wayne, in a prison. And he meets up with Liam Neeson, who plays Henry Ducard, who tells him about the League of Shadows, who in the comics are the League of Assassins. And he is trained in the art of ninja, and he's basically going to be their weapon against Gotham, to destroy Gotham in order to help rein in humanity and help the world survive. Of course, you know, Bruce Wayne rails against this and ends up destroying this monastery, which I'm sure led to the deaths of plenty of people. So for someone who doesn't want to kill anybody, that is this weird thing, especially in these Nolan movies, where a lot of times through his own actions, and this is something that happens in the comics too, where people are killed inadvertently, not directly by Batman. And there's some interesting things that can be said about that, or by not acting, he ensures that people die. But this movie is really great. I really enjoyed it. It kind of kept a lot of the same aesthetic. The Batman costume, while updated, still kind of has that same feel where you can't really see Batman move. And part of that is intentional. Christopher Nolan shot all the action scenes in a way where it's from the point of view of the people that are being attacked by Batman. So you never get a really good look at him, which works for this movie. We also have you know, once when we're introduced to the League of Shadows, their leader, Ra's al Ghul, was played by Ken Watanabe. He dies, of course, and before he escapes, Christian Bale saves Henry Ducard, who then, of course, comes back as being the big bad of the movie because he's Ra's al Ghul. The person that he killed, thinking was Ra's al Ghul, was actually a decoy, which I was like, that's a brilliant way of kind of having this character be able to continue. Now, we also get a bunch of great actors in this. We got Katie Holmes doing some of her best work as Rachel Dawes, a character that was created specifically for these movies. Gary Oldman as Lieutenant Gordon. Cillian Murphy as Dr. Jonathan Crane / the Scarecrow. Tom Wilkinson as Carmine Falcone. We even get Rutger Hauer in this and Morgan Freeman. So we have just like this solid cast, and we have this movie that really is trying to show Batman trying to inspire people to do better and saving the city from destruction. This is just a really well done action movie, a really well done superhero movie, and one that I think kind of grew with me. When I first saw it, I was like, I was all right. But as I saw it more and more often, I kind of saw the all the interesting things that they were doing and how they were distilling a lot of different stories from Batman comics in order to give a coherent and movie and to really focus on this character of Bruce Wayne. And that's something that continues with The Dark Knight, where The Dark Knight is really more crime-centric. And at the end of Batman Begins, we introduce the Joker with a playing card that Lieutenant Gordon shows to Batman. The Dark Knight begins with a literal introduction of the Joker as a bank heist is occurring and he being the mastermind behind everything. Criminals start to delay in doing what they're doing because of fear of Batman. And we see him taking out drug dealers and the Scarecrow in particular in order to kind of save the city. And his whole idea is that Bruce wants to inspire the city in order for him no longer be Batman or for him no longer be needed. And this movie kind of leads to an alliance with Harvey Dent and with Lieutenant Gordon, who then becomes Captain Gordon, who then becomes Commissioner Gordon, in order to stop crime, in order to stop the mafia. And through their actions, they, of course, actions have consequences, and the consequences, the rise of chaos, in particular in the form of the Joker. This movie's great, and I talked about it a bit more at length, so I just kind of wanted to point out a couple of things about it today, just to say, like, this, I think, is, in a way, like, the ideal version of Batman. There's still some things that aren't great about it, like the growly voice that Christian Bale decides to all of a sudden use in this movie because he doesn't have it in Batman Begins, is weird and can be a bit jarring, especially in when he continues to use it in The Dark Knight Rises. But this movie is very solid. I think there was something about the Joker that really spoke to people. I mean, to the point that even the Joker movie that came out last year, people were enamored with it. This movie, I think, kind of showed that the comic book movie could do more. It can go to different places and it can aspire to be more than just a straight up action movie. The Dark Knight's great. And then, of course, tragedy. Heath Ledger passed before the movie was premiered, and in memoriam and post mortem, he received an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. And I think in a sense that impacted what came afterwards with The Dark Knight Rises. Now, The Dark Knight Rises is uneven. It's too long. And there's some really perplexing choices made by Christopher Nolan in this movie. But I love The Dark Knight Rises. And I love it because I'm a comic book fan through and through. And I've read plenty of comic books. And what this movie really comes across as is a giant crossover comic. And crossover comics are good and bad. Crossover comics can tell these huge stories, and unfortunately, because of these huge stories, they end up becoming unwieldy. And a lot of times there's weird inconsistencies in the story. They don't end up making sense. And the premise is usually better than the execution of it. And I think that's what The Dark Knight Rises ends up doing. But even with that, you know, we have this overarching story where we reintroduce the League of Assassins. We introduce Bane as part of the League of Assassins. Tom Hardy's just fucking great as Bane. We even have Catwoman coming back, played by Anne Hathaway, and very much the way that Catwoman is portrayed in comics, and Anne Hathaway's great in this. I think she does there's one scene in particular where I think really shows how she nails this character of Selina Kyle of Catwoman, where she's with a senator and they tip off the police, and in order to not be thought of as a suspect, she starts screaming her head off the moment the police come in, acting hysterical, and they tell her to leave, and the moment they're out of the room, she just stops and is like the coolest, like cool as a cucumber. She isn't fazed by any of this, and I think that little nugget that shows that they understood the character of Catwoman. Their take on Bane is different from the comics the look more so than anything. Bane's always been kind of a master tactician. Him being part of the League of Shadows is something new, but him being basically the physical equal of Batman, and like, you know, if you're going to have Bane, you have to have the iconic scene of Bane breaking Batman's back, because that's the thing that's synonymous with Bane. And even seeing it in this movie, knowing that it's coming, I loved it. I really enjoyed this movie. I think this is a movie that kind of, if you know about comics, and you know about specifically like some certain stories from the late 90s and early aughts, I'm thinking of Nightfall, I'm thinking of Night Quest, and No Man's Land, that nails it, you know. And as on top of all that, you know, I think having John Blake, played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who ends up being kind of the moral center of this movie and setting him up as almost like the de facto Robin of these movies, because his name is Robin, and setting him up as the person to take on the mantle of Batman, because as Batman says, and as I've said throughout these whole movies, you know, Bruce Wayne has just been trying to stop being Batman and try to live a normal life. And the choices that are made, yes, lead to him being able to retire as Batman at the end of The Dark Knight, but it's all based on a lie, and it all goes to shit eventually. At the end of it, you know, he sacrifices himself, or sacrifices the name of Batman, and he's able to run off with and find happiness with Selina Kyle in Europe. And I know some people want to think of that as a dream sequence. No, there's nothing in these movies where there's really, aside from the I'm thinking specifically in Batman Begins when Bruce Wayne is gassed with fear toxin, there's nothing in these movies where dream sequences happen. So no, this is the text of what we're being shown. Batman is able to have, or Bruce Wayne is able to have a happy ending, and John Blake is set up as the new Batman moving forward. And, you know, had we gotten a John Blake movie, it probably would have been pretty cool, but I don't think we need it. This trilogy is really about this character of Bruce Wayne, and is it the most accurate portrayal of Batman? Probably not, but it works for these movies, and I think it's one of the best portrayals of Batman. And, you know, I think this movie's great. I think Christopher Nolan's movies are a lot of fun. They're technically really well made, and they always end up doing something really interesting with these characters and end up talking about bigger themes through Batman, you know? That's great. Now, after this, right after this, you know, we get the beginning of the DCEU, and of course we get a recasting of Batman with Ben Affleck. And I'm not going to talk about those particular movies, but I just wanted to say a couple of things about Ben Affleck's take. I thought Ben Affleck did great with what little he was given to do. Specifically, I thought he was great in Batman v Superman. Like, his take on Batman and being, like, an older Batman who murders people. I know people were like, Batman doesn't kill, but I'm like, yeah, if you watch those first two Tim Burton movies, he definitely fucking kills. So that's not too out of character, because even in the early comics, Batman packed a gun and he killed people. So that doesn't bother me. I think him portraying an older Batman, a weathered Batman, kind of a jaded Batman, Yeah, if you're using The Dark Knight Returns as your source material, it makes perfect sense. And I think he nails it, especially in that movie. And that little cameo that he has in Suicide Squad, I think, really shows what he could have done had he been able to actually do his Batman movie. Unfortunately, by the time that Justice League came around, you could just tell that he was done playing Batman. And eventually, you know, hopefully next year, we are actually going to get Robert Pattinson and Matt Reeves the Batman. And I'm really looking forward to that. I really think that Robert Pattinson's going to kill it as Batman. I know a lot of people that I talked to when they announced it, they were thinking of, like, you know, him in the Twilight movies. But to just say, or to just to reduce Robert Pattinson to those movies is a disservice to Robert Pattinson, because Robert Pattinson, he's done a lot of interesting stuff. Like, last year he was in The Lighthouse, and he's fucking phenomenal in that. He's a guy that can play this character that he can play Bruce Wayne. I know he can do a good job with it, and I'm really interested in seeing it, along with just all the people that have been cast, and, you know, such as like Colin Farrell and Zoe Kravitz and Paul Dano as, you know, villains in the movie, and even John Turturro and Jeffrey Wright and Andy Serkis. Like, I think this cast looks phenomenal, and like I said, I am really looking forward to this, and I honestly feel like this is going to be one of the best takes on Batman. In my mind, I think of him as the Batman who fucks. That's what I think of, just because I think Robert Pattinson has like this, in a lot of his movies, he's got like this raw sexuality to him. And that's what I think of, for me, is just a play on the Batman who laughs, who is a current DC Comics villain. And, you know, I'm looking forward to see what future Batman movies have for us. Batman's great, and it's been a blast being able to kind of go back and to talk about, revisit some of these years, talk about some different movies that I really enjoyed, and to talk about some franchises, and in a way giving me an opportunity to kind of think about the importance of franchises in a way, and how franchises can sometimes, you know, be good, not just be cash grabs, and although they're that too. And that's not such a bad thing necessarily, you know. In the end, this is entertainment. It's trying to get your money, and all we can wish for is that sometimes it's better than others. And really what I've wanted to do is just spotlight stuff that I think has been really good at being entertaining, and whether that means that it's, you know, a disgusting gory horror movie, or a tight drama, or a character-centric piece with strong female leads, or a straight-up balls-to-the-wall action movie, or a fun kids movie that can teach you about empathy, or something that's going to teach you about a culture that you may not know. I think this is the power of movies, and I think that's why they're important, and that's why I kind of want to talk about this. So that's it for now. I have an idea for a third season, so we may be back eventually. But thank you for sticking around for two full seasons of this meandering, tangent-filled takes on movies, and just me talking about my opinions on movies. Thank you so much for listening, and hopefully we'll see you again.